This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The House passes a $1.2 trillion bill to fund most of the federal government for the coming 6 months. But most Republicans vote no, with Marjorie Taylor Greene filing a motion to attempt to oust new Speaker Mike Johnson. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We are joined today by my colleagues, editorial board members Kate Batchelder Odell and Minae Ukwe-Barua. Almost halfway through the fiscal year, the House is moving now to pass a budget under regular order instead of the kind of stopgap continuing resolutions appropriations bills that have kept the government running for the first 6 months. House Speaker Mike Johnson is applauding this $1.2 trillion package. Here's a piece of what he said. House Republicans achieved conservative policy wins, rejected extreme Democrat proposals, and imposed substantial cuts while significantly strengthening national defense. He went on to say that this was the best achievable outcome in a divided government, noting that we have a Republican House, a Democratic Senate, and a Democrat in the White House. But the vote in the House on this spending package was 286 to 134, and more Republicans saying nay than saying aye. Let's listen to one of those Republicans, Congressman Chip Roy, before the vote.
Well, here we are again. The swamp is back in full force. We have a 1,000-page bill of $1.2 trillion filled with all manners of spending priorities that are at odds with the American people. That's what we have in front of us. This bill is over 1,000 pages long. It contains hundreds of pages of report language, 1,400 earmarks, and we've had about 24 hours to review it. That is not the way to do business. And the American people and American families are the ones left holding the bag.
Kate, maybe the best place to start, as we often do, is at the beginning. So can you give us a sense of what is in this bill? What are the pluses that each side is claiming and the negatives that are being discussed?
Yeah, so this is the last six appropriations bills for the year. Congress handled the other package earlier. And so it encompasses national defense, homeland security, labor and health and human services. And both sides are claiming some discrete wins here. Republicans are pretty focused on claiming that they got more detention beds, about 41,000, and when Biden requested only 25,000 in his budget request. And they're also claiming that they got money for funding about 22,000 border agents, which is consistent with the levels that are asked for in H.R. 2, the Republican immigration package. So Republicans are claiming some narrow wins on the border. Democrats are focusing mostly on the domestic priorities that they were able to get $1 billion more for child care and Head Start is a big one that Democrats are touting. Now, this is not an excellent bill because anytime that you jam these bills together in large packages, this isn't an omnibus where they pass all 12 bills at once, but they broke it up really into two groups of six, and it's not much of an improvement. But we live in a world of available alternatives, and the options here were the following. You could keep funding the government on a stopgap measure, continuing resolution for the rest of the year, and a lot of the House fiscal conservatives wanted to do this. The damage of that would have been to the national defense budget because it couldn't get the 3% increase that it was supposed to get with a continuing resolution. And it would waste a lot of time and energy, impair our ability to train and exercise. Not a great outcome. And the other option was to shut down the government. And what follows that, the next time that works for Republicans will be the first time. So it's not a great outcome here to have this bill that is being rammed through, that is ladled down with some pork and earmarks, but it may be the best outcome given narrowly divided government and Republicans with a two-vote majority in the House.
The question of alternatives is always the one that I have for these backbenchers who are out calling this another deal with the swamp, Minae, because I agree those are the only alternatives I see is another continuing resolution, which, as Kate says, would wreak havoc on the spending priorities that including some Republicans have, such as the Pentagon. Or the alternative is this kind of government shutdown. And we were now days away from a deadline that would have put that into effect. And I just don't understand the stance of some of these folks that if only we hang on a little bit longer and push a little bit more, Democrats are going to cave. Chuck Schumer in the Senate is going to cave. President Biden is going to agree to sign the bill that he doesn't want to sign. I think more likely is what Kate lays out, the kind of politics that are going to backfire on Republicans. And don't pretend that this hasn't happened before. I don't think they can, because we had some shutdowns in recent years. And my memory of the history there is it was Republicans often saying, if we just hang on a little bit more, we can get what we want. The government shut down. People were mad about that. It backfired. There was a backlash on the Republicans who had made that choice. And by the way, when they shut down the government, the people who are off end up getting back pay later. So it's not as if this is some huge budget savings anyway. And so I also think it's fascinating, Manet, here. We have a new Speaker of the House, and he is not some kind of establishment squish. Mike Johnson is a real conservative, I think. And yet when he gets in the Speaker's office and he gets the Speaker's gavel, he ends up making the same kinds of hard choices that previous speakers have had to make, including Kevin McCarthy. I think that says something about the dynamics of what it is like to be in that office, trying to make sure that you make the choices that are good not only for your district, but good for the country and good for the Republican conference as a whole.
Exactly. I want to start with the first part of what you said regarding the politics of a shutdown and the strategy of the conservative members of the House Republican Caucus, who tend to always push these budget fights in that direction. Really, history shows us that a shutdown benefits the group that comes into it with the most credibility. I think when Democrats show that they are more serious compared with Republicans about actually governing and seem to have their act together and be able to present a united front, they tend to be the beneficiaries of a shutdown because they're able to blame the chaos in Washington on intransigent Republicans. And that was true even during the Obama administration, when you had under John Boehner a relatively unified House Republican caucus. Today, I think it's even more true because House Republicans have tagged themselves with the brand of being extremely disorderly, having deposed their own speaker shortly into the beginning of his leadership of the party. And so I think that even moderate watchers of Washington politics, not only your insiders, but your average voter, is aware of the turmoil that House Republicans have gone through over the course of the past couple of years. And any shutdown fight would be very quickly pinned on them by President Biden and by Chuck Schumer. And it's very likely that in the end, they would reconvene and feel the pressure to come to a solution on funding the government that would be even worse than what their last ask was before going into the shutdown. And so it's unlikely that Republicans could benefit in a situation of that kind. I think Mike Johnson knows that. He's playing with a weak hand from the start and thinks even cutting a deal, which is not the sort of thing that would be pleasing to most Republican voters, is better than going into that chaos and knowing Republicans are going to take the blame. But more broadly, I do think that Mike Johnson knows that basically he is, up until perhaps now, in a tacit agreement with the conservative members of the House Republican caucus, that he is going to be able to strike these suspension deals to keep the government running. They want to be able to tell their constituents that they held a hard line. But I think they probably know that it's unlikely that they're going to get a better representative of their party who is more conservative and who is more pleasing and acceptable to their voters than Mike Johnson. They've already gone through one round of it, deposing Kevin McCarthy, who is easier to tag as an establishment Republican who didn't share conservatives' priorities. I think Mike Johnson has a good deal of credibility with the public. And so there's little to benefit from them in going through another round of searching for new leadership. But nonetheless, it seems as if we might be headed towards Republican infighting and at least a questioning of Johnson's leadership. Even if he isn't deposed from the speakership, he's going to have to wrangle members to his defense. In terms of the outcomes, as Kate went through on policy, this strategy has clearly been hurting Republicans, and it seems as if it could lead to even further blows to their national reputation because we're returning to the same chaotic infighting that we've been going through for the past couple of years.
Hang tight. We'll be right back with more in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
Welcome back. The other fascinating piece of the challenge that Speaker Johnson faces is that his choices are limited by concessions that Speaker Kevin McCarthy made to these hardline Republicans at the beginning of this congressional term. And Kate, I wonder if you can explain how that works, this Rules Committee seats, and the fact that now Republicans are having to pass things under suspensions of the rules.
I would consider this really the original sin of the House's current dysfunction in this particular Congress. If you remember how long it took Speaker Kevin McCarthy, how many ballots it took for him to get elected to the speakership job, he had to placate various demands from competing factions in his conference. And one of those demands from his hardliners, from these supposed fiscal conservatives, was that they have seats on the Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee is essential for moving legislation and bringing it to the floor. So McCarthy allowed three of these members to have seats on the Rules Committee. Now, the practical effect of that has been that these members won't allow anything to move through the Rules Committee. When you can't get a piece of legislation on the floor through the normal fashion, you have some procedural options you can go through, and one of them is called a suspension of the rules. And what that means is that you can bring something to the floor, but it requires two-thirds of the body to agree on it to suspend the rules. So now, basically, the House is being forced to operate much like the Senate, except it has none of the experience of needing so many votes to pass anything. Another reality of that means that it has taken a lot of leverage away from Republicans and their ability to get priorities done, because now they need a lot of Democratic votes to pass anything. And that means Democrats can make demands, and it means that the GOP can't get things they want done. And so one of the more regrettable things about this entire episode with the budget that we're now finishing nearly halfway into the fiscal year is that it's possible to imagine that Republicans could have actually gotten some policy priorities in the budget fight if they had all hung together and insisted on a couple discrete wins. And the example I've been using is perhaps overturning President Biden's really destructive ban on liquefied natural gas. I mean, here's an example of something. Energy policy is one of the last places where Republicans are fully in agreement. And it is an awful policy from President Biden, both on the domestic and foreign policy merits. I mean, they could have been pounding him on that every day. It's a political missed opportunity, really, this budget, because the Republicans weren't able to drive a hard bargain because they were so fractious.
And some of the difficulty is simply the narrowness of the Republican majority. And it has gotten even more narrow as Republicans have lost a special election in New York on Long Island. But part of it is the existence of this chaos caucus that seems to me to be more interested in making headlines and working on their politics back home than either getting anything done or defending the Republican caucus. Because remember, to win a majority in the House, to retain a majority after this November's election, Republicans need to win some of those seats, including in Biden districts, districts where President Biden is not all that unpopular, in places like the suburbs of New York, the suburbs of Chicago, in California. And they need to be able to go to those voters and say, we are willing to pass a budget. We're not going to shut down the government and stop people from getting their Social Security checks and so forth. But in terms of lessons never learned, on Friday, amid the debate over the spending bill, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene announced that she was filing a motion to vacate the chair to oust Speaker Johnson from his post. Let's listen to a bit of what she said.
This is not personal against Mike Johnson. He's a very good man, and I have respect for him as a person, but he is not doing the job. The proof is in the vote count today. He passed a budget that should have never been brought to the floor.
We have to find a new Speaker of the House. I'm not sure how that vote count would be, and I've heard a lot of Democrats may support him, so I'm not sure how that works out.
If they do that, don't you worry that you're basically pushing him or any new Speaker into the arms of Democrats? Because, like,
he's already in the arms of Democrats, and it's proof in the vote count today.
The latest that I have seen on how this is going to unfold procedurally, there's a line in a Washington Post report that says, because this motion to vacate the chair was not filed with advance notice of the resolution, it does not automatically move to the top of the House's agenda and can't be considered until after a 16-day recess. So, Manet, fascinating how this is going to play out now. All of these members of Congress are going to fly home to their districts, and then I guess maybe there will be a vote on retaining or ousting Speaker Johnson when they get back, or maybe not?
Yeah, it seems like we'll have to wait and see exactly how it's going to play out. I'm certain that Speaker Johnson at the moment is already in touch with his staff about how they're going to game plan for it, probably getting in touch with some of the conservative members of his conference and making sure that the support is still there. I think that there's reason to assume that it is, that Marjorie Taylor Greene, for exactly the sorts of reasons you mentioned, wanting to grab some headlines, feels like she is able to go ahead and make this move, show her voters and show her broader supporters that she's critical of the approach that Johnson has taken with these suspension votes recruiting Democratic support. But she probably hasn't enlisted enough comrades in this movement to actually depose him from within the party. So it's possible that she's also whipping votes on her end, and we'll see if there is enough of a lack of support among House Republicans for this to actually have legs. But even still, just the fact that this resolution would be advanced after just the latest round of Mike Johnson having to do what he believed was the only option out of a bunch of bad potential choices he could make to keep the government funded and stop Republicans from taking a big political hit, that he's paying the cost by having to waste time and effort defending his possession of the gavel. And Republicans are going to look bad whether or not the resolution moves forward.
Hang tight. We'll be right back after one more break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Kate, I wonder what you make of this resolution being offered to depose Speaker Mike Johnson. I guess I'm with Manet that a few things I think are different than the Kevin McCarthy example that we saw last year. One is that Mike Johnson, I think, has more conservative credibility with even some of the people who are criticizing him now and some of the people who voted to oust Kevin McCarthy. And two, we have the example of what happened when Kevin McCarthy was thrown out the window. And then Republicans spent almost a month trying different candidates, getting nothing done, and having all of America watching this play out on the House floor. I think that is not what many of them want to be doing right now, and particularly in an election year when many of them and also President Trump is going to be on the ballot in November.
Look, I think this motion to vacate is absurd for all the reasons you describe. And what I'm about to say might fall into the category of Ronald Reagan's joke, you know, digging through a pile of manure, there's got to be a pony in there somewhere. But if this resolution moves and then fails, which it looks at this point like it could seriously not go anywhere because you don't have support from some of the other conservatives like Matt Gaetz, who, helped depose McCarthy for intensely personal reasons towards McCarthy. You don't have that support as of now. You have less appetite to do it. So if this motion becomes an empty gun and it fails, I think this crowd will have basically self-marginalized itself in the conference. And that would be a good development if Mike Johnson doesn't have to live in daily fear of getting deposed because this weapon is over time less potent if you keep doing it and you don't succeed. So I'm hopeful that this really will fail and just expose how phony all of these objectives projections really are. I think one good sign of the appropriations bill with all its deficiencies and shortcomings is that Mike Johnson made a choice and he advocated for it and he put the bill on the floor and he got it done. In recent weeks, he's appeared somewhat reticent trying to manage all of these competing factions in his narrow majority. And it wasn't clear what he was going to do. But I think the backbenchers in his conference are likely to respect his show of leadership, his stepping up to the plate and deciding what needs to be done and defending it. And so I guess I'm hopeful that what we have here is a success from Johnson that we can compound into other successes, such as U.S. support for Ukraine, which has been stalled out for the House. But if these critics are going to howl and threaten him no matter what, maybe over time he becomes more able to just tune out that noise and continue moving on priorities.
If this motion to vacate a chair does come up, it will definitely be a spectacle. One thing that will be interesting to watch is what Democrats under their leader Hakeem Jeffries do. Jeffries has at some points made intimations that if there were another move to oust another Republican speaker, that he might be willing to lend some votes in order to keep Mike Johnson in place. But as always, there might be a price for that. And I think Speaker Johnson might be unwilling to pay that, as, by the way, Kevin McCarthy, to his credit, was. He did not want to stay in the Speaker's office with help from Democratic votes because he thought that would undermine his leadership with the Republican conference. And so that's one dynamic that will be interesting to watch. But Manet, Kate a moment ago mentioned Matt Gaetz, and he is another interesting figure here. Here's what he's saying on Friday. If we vacated this Speaker, we'd end up with a Democrat. When I vacated the last one, I made a promise to the country that we would not end up with the Democrat Speaker. And then he added that I could not make that promise again. And so that is a notable piece of caution from one of the people who was a driver of the effort to throw out Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
Yes, I think that Matt Gaetz was able to convince his own constituents, both the voters in his home district in Florida and also his many admiring fans from his other public appearances, that the McCarthy fight was a success, that it pushed the Republican Party in a conservative direction. And he knows that going through another round is unlikely to lead to an outcome which is better than what he was able to get. Now, obviously, his premise is flawed, because if you look at the policy that has come out under the Johnson speakership, none of it has reflected conservative priorities any more than the bills that McCarthy pushed. In fact, I would submit that the debt ceiling deal from May 2023 was the high watermark for Republicans in terms of actually exacting certain priorities, notwithstanding a failure to increase the defense budget as much as non-defense discretionary spending. You did get things like work requirements, and you got the clawback of the funding for the IRS, all of which Kevin McCarthy was able to negotiate. But Mike Johnson, despite perhaps having more conservative bona fides personally than Kevin McCarthy, is working with a very unruly caucus and has been having to depend on this Democratic support to get these bills pushed across. And they're already exacting a big price in terms of policy in every single one of these deals. And so I think Gaetz is actually correct in the sense that Democrats' leverage will only increase if there is another move to depose the Speaker. We would get much worse policy outcomes for conservatives substantively in every single one of these deals. And he probably wants to continue to take his victory lap from deposing McCarthy, despite the fact that it hasn't actually improved anything for himself or his constituents. He knows that he's unlikely to come out looking good if Republicans descend into another chaotic infight.
Thank you, Manet and Kate. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button, and we'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.